This is The End User, episode 102 for Friday, July 20th. Arduino-based accountants leave. Hello and welcome to The End User, the show where we get together and talk about our experience with consumer technology with a bit of news from your perspective. The End User.
It's the tech news that you can use.
I am your host and producer, Chris Barnes.
And I am Gotham's Reckoning, Taylor Moore.
Excellent. Are you going to see the Batman movie this weekend?
I already got my tickets for tomorrow.
Nice. You'll have to let me know how it goes. So I'm going on vacation, so I won't get to see it.
I can tell you right now how it goes.
It goes awesome?
It goes awesomely.
No, it's think different.
Just because Apple made a slogan with incorrect grammar 25 years ago doesn't mean that I have to apply those same rules in my life.
See, but that's the clever part about it, is because they were thinking differently by saying think different.
Yeah, no, I get it.
Well, anyway, so we've got a bit of a short week this week, but we've got some interesting stuff in the show. What do you think? Let's get on to our first story of the week. Now, this is huge news to me.
Yeah, so Yahoo has been sort of a revolving door of CEOs the last 2 years.
Yeah, it's been them and HP, right?
Yeah, and so they've been having some troubles, but their latest CEO is probably one of the highest profile that they've ever had, and it's definitely a big move. Google employee number 20, Marissa Mayer, and one of the most public faces of Google and the driving force behind Gmail and the current look of Google's homepage is going to be the new CEO at Yahoo.
Yeah, so doesn't that change the game a little bit? I had all but written Yahoo off as a company who doesn't know what they're doing, doesn't have any direction. I guess they still are for now. So we'll see what she can actually do there.
But they're definitely bringing her on to try to give them some sort of, I guess, a creative direction. And I really like the quotes that she's been giving just over this past couple of days. She's consistently emphasized that they are going to completely revamp Yahoo based on the needs of the end user.
Yes, so she gave our podcast a little plug. That was nice of her. Thank you.
Well, she spelled it out in three words. I think she's not hip to our spelling. But yeah, obviously, we are the most important people for Yahoo to consider.
Yes, absolutely. And so Google's killing iGoogle at some point in the future. What is it, next year? And I feel like Yahoo could step in there somehow. There are already a lot of people's homepage, I would imagine.
Yeah, sure. And I bet a lot of those people have had a Yahoo homepage for over 10 years.
Yeah, years and years and years. And it just kind of persists. And now it'll actually get good, perhaps.
It might. We'll see.
So what does she have to do to make Yahoo relevant? I mean, Yahoo's going to be a company and they're probably going to make money for a long time is my guess. But what do they have to do to be relevant in our technology sphere?
They have to do something new. They can't compete with everybody else. They're already way behind. You know, they can't compete in just straight up search. They
right.
can't compete in email. You know, they're not going to make an office suite. They have to figure out a new niche that people think of Yahoo as that thing.
A new niche that's not fantasy football or something like that. So they've already got that market.
Right, but they have to have, you know, something that everybody uses.
Right. So they can't do what Bing is trying to do. They can't just force themselves into the search market. In fact, they
right.
use Bing to power their search engine now, and maybe that's a good thing. They'll be less distracted on some other projects that may or may not be more important in the future.
Yeah.
Okay, so it's time for crazy predictions. What's Yahoo going to do to turn themselves around?
I don't know. I mean, that's why I don't get paid the big bucks, and she does.
Yeah, that's right. That's why you're not the CEO, I guess. Yeah, I don't know. We'll have to see what they can do with this. But they, you know, that's the talent right there. If there's anyone that could possibly write that ship, it's her.
The finance section, I think, you know, maybe there's some room for improvement against Google's finance section in a simpler, easier to use way than say like Bloomberg or somebody else. Microsoft, I don't think, is any better than Google. And Yahoo in many ways already has a superior finance section. You know, the ability to check certain stocks is a little bit more clear cut. They could revamp that, but I don't know. That's maybe not a killer app.
Well, what do you think about news? Do you think they could kill it on news?
I don't think they can kill it on news. That would be the hardest market for them to try to break.
It's too mature. Here, just thinking crazy, what if they moved out of desktop application and into mobile?
Mobile would be tough, but not impossible. But then you're talking about, you know, basically getting a whole new workforce.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
You have to think about what the people already at Yahoo can do.
Right. So I don't know. We'll have to see what she's going to do. And I'm excited. When's the last time you said that about Yahoo? I'm excited to see what happens to Yahoo. It's been a long time since I've had the ability to say that.
And I think I feel the same way. Yeah, this is really interesting from an industry perspective.
It is kind of funny, though. You know, we don't usually talk about the industry quite like this, but this is a huge
move. And we definitely don't talk about the boardroom.
No, definitely not. But I just think it's interesting that we're hopeful just because one of the Google executives is going over to Yahoo. That's just kind of a funny thought.
But it's a Google executive, you know, with a strong public presence and a pretty clear vision.
Yeah, definitely. She's she has been more public than other executives have been in the past.
Well, the other employees. I mean, she wasn't an executive.
Yeah, right. Well, you're right. She's an engineer. She is now an executive, I suppose.
Yeah.
Cool. And to boot, as if that wasn't good enough already for Yahoo, it's a great role model to see a woman CEO step in there, don't you think?
Yeah, sure. I mean, it's great. I think it's not really all that surprising at this point. To me, it seems like a great fit.
Yeah, that's true. Well, so we'll see what happens with that. And let's move on to our second story. We've got some AT&T news coming out. And are you excited about this? Shared data plans? What's going on?
I am not excited about this. So I am currently on a family plan where everybody has smartphones. And they are announcing a new plan where you can share unlimited talk, text, and tiered data. But it's not cheap. So the plan starts at unlimited talk and text with 1 gigabyte. So that's $40 plus $45 per phone. And it goes up from there. But basically, I don't think there's anyone who is saving much, if any, money on any of these deals.
Yeah, and it just seems to me like it's just not enough data, right?
Right. Well, it goes up to 20 gigabytes, and so you could pay $230 a month for 20 gigabytes of data for yourself.
Right, but I mean, why do they even bother with a 1 gigabyte tier? I mean, that seems crazy to share that amount of data.
Well, their prior tier, their individual tier, starts at 300 megabytes.
And I also wonder if, and I remember you saying that was a pretty good deal, the 300 meg one. If you don't do a whole lot of data intensive things and that's what you really need, then.
I said the 200 megabytes for $15 a month was a good deal, but they stopped offering that. And I don't think 300 megabytes for $20 a month is a good deal.
Yeah. Well, so, I don't know. Well, what is this aimed at? Is this aimed at people with multiple devices?
It's just aimed at, I don't know, getting more money out of people, I think. I mean, they're trying to simplify their plans in some sort of way, but it doesn't really make sense the way that they're doing it. It doesn't seem to me that the plan being too complicated was the problem that people had with it. But it does really, it gives a little bit of an advantage for people who have tablets. It's only an extra $10 a month to add a tablet onto your plan, as opposed to, you know, if you had an iPad before, you had to pay $20, $25 a month just to use it. Now it's $10 a month on top of your plan.
And I just wish that I could buy a plan and use it with all my devices, but I guess that's not where the business model is, right?
Well, it should really be that way. I mean, either you pay per device or you pay per megabyte. Yeah, like you either pay for the data or you pay for the device to have unlimited data, and you really shouldn't pay for both. It's very unfair.
I mean, do I really have to put a NAT router on my person? Like, that seems a little crazy, and it seems like something that's a little crazy that I just might do.
Well, people do it.
Yeah.
People have been doing it.
I've heard of people using a MiFi or something like that and having an iPod Touch and carrying that around as their phone or something like that. It's a little hacky, right? It's not the best. It's not the worst either, though. Also, I checked up on my phone bill the other month. I'd only used like 17 minutes in the entire month. And, you know, I have to pay all this money for this thing that I don't use. So maybe it's time to get a NAT router on in my pocket. Maybe I should do that.
Maybe, yeah. Your 17 minutes per month would probably be in higher fidelity.
Yeah, they would be. That's the funny thing. The phone lines are still awful quality compared to Skype, which we, for example, are speaking over here. And you sound pretty good.
Yeah, I remember the first few times I used Skype, it was just unbelievable.
It's like, oh my God, they're here. Right. They're in my head.
So many years ago. And phones have only gotten worse, and Skype's only gotten better.
So is this, does this put them even with Verizon, do you think, in terms of expense? I feel like they were cheaper before than Verizon, or at least they had cheaper options than Verizon.
You know, I would have to crunch the numbers, I feel like it could get pretty complicated. And maybe that's part of their point. They don't want to have a direct comparison to Verizon.
Yeah, could be.
I just don't even know. I'm sure it's cheaper in some cases and more expensive in others.
Yeah, it's probably not that simple. Anytime you try to force something into a black and white, like I just tried to, it usually ends up not being the case, right?
Well, I'm all about crunching the numbers. I just haven't had a chance to do it. Maybe next week.
You need to put on that green tax guy's visor and have a manual slot machine style lever to calculate the sum. This would be an excellent movie scene or something like that.
As long as I could get it to work with Microsoft Excel, that would be fine.
There must be a way. There must be a way. I smell an Arduino project in this one.
Arduino-based accountant's lever.
Arduino-based old-school accountant's lever.
Yeah, that'd be something.
Put it on Kickstarter. Boom. .com. Old-style Arduino accountant's thing. It's gone. Let's turn on the afterburners, Taylor. What do we got?
So, for starters, we've got new Walkmen from Sony. You know, they're digital music players. And their high-end one this time has Android 4.0.
Cool. Well, that's good to see. I'd love to see these OSs getting pushed down into peripheral devices that aren't necessarily phones. That's kind
of
neat.
Yeah. The rest of them don't. And in fact, they don't even have touch screens. But I guess we can just ignore those.
And Windows 8 is slated to go on sale for October 26. So everyone who has been looking at when the Windows 7 launch was right.
Yeah. So good call, Chris.
Yep. And we'll see the Surface on October 26 is also what that means, because they said that they were going to announce it day and date.
Right. So the Nokia Lumia 900 on AT&T is already cut from its $100 starting price down to $50. And this probably has a little bit to do with the fact that it won't be getting an upgrade to the already announced Windows 8. But also, if you are into outdated phones like the Nokia Lumia 900, it is coming to Verizon in case you wanted it there for some reason.
I kind of do want it there. I don't know. Depends on how much it costs off contract.
You might get a pretty good deal.
Yeah. If I can get a good deal on the Nokia 900, the Lumia 900, I might really take them up on that, even though it's not upgradable.
Well, as a Windows phone user, this will be interesting to you, Chris. Turns out that Windows Mobile, you know, the old 6.5 operating system that you used to have back in the day, is still a more popular system than Windows Phone 7.
Yeah, that's not surprising. There's a bunch of enterprise deployments of Windows Mobile, and a lot of people just have it on their hip because their business gave it to them. So that is kind of goofy, right? But that's not really surprising to me. And also, it's feature complete. However difficult it was to use, it is feature complete in a way that Windows Phone still isn't.
Sure. So, well, here's my recommendation. Time to upgrade, people. Time to upgrade.
Yeah, I'm gonna break out my old HTC Touch Pro and just give it a spin for a day, see how it goes. Get a fresh custom ROM on there and just take it for a spin.
Maybe you'll stick with it.
I doubt it.
So last week we reported on Apple pulling its products out of the EPEAT green product registry, and they've have released a public letter from Senior VP of Engineering Bob Mansfield saying that this was a mistake, and they went ahead and added all their products back in. Turns out they could do this because it's a voluntary list. You can add and remove your products at will, and no one really checks all that carefully.
Yeah, this is weird, and Apple never admits that there was a mistake. Maybe this is the Tim Cook era in action. They admitted a mistake, and they corrected it. So that's
I think it's a big part of that, yeah. I mean, I think they did this without Steve Jobs' conviction, and they've reversed it without Steve Jobs' conviction.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's interesting to see them back off of that a little bit. So Mozilla has released Firefox 14, so if you haven't launched Firefox in a while, you need to go update it, because it brings some goodies, including the full screen mode in OS X Lion. You know, that fourth icon off to the left of your menu bar that puts things in full screen.
It's actually all the way on the top right.
Right. No, sorry. I meant on the top, on the leftmost side of the right of the top of the browser.
No. It's in the top right corner.
Oh, is it top right?
Yeah.
Well, anyway, they've implemented that, as well as a couple other things, including the SPDY protocol, which Twitter has famously adopted to deliver you tweets faster.
Yeah,
faster
that's
tweets.
Great.
I like it.
It'd be even greater if you wouldn't try to confuse our OS X users.
I could have sworn it was the leftmost button on the right top of the bar there.
Nope, I'm looking at it right now. And then once you enter full screen, it's still top right corner. It's a blue icon in the menu bar.
All right, well, I take it back.
All right, well, that's all we have for Afterburners this week, so let's shut them off.
Shut them off. Don't burn yourself, Taylor. Be careful.
So my first story for this week is this cool little thing that a Finnish company has developed that uses your smartphone to track variance in the Earth's magnetic field in order to navigate inside buildings. So it's the variance of the magnetic field caused by the structure of the building itself.
Cool, because structures cause a magnetic field to attenuate a little bit, so they can sense that attenuation and get a sense for what's around them.
Right.
Is that how it goes?
It either builds a map of the building that you're in, or a map has already been uploaded and it tracks you within that map.
So that's really cool. I bet you Google Maps could use this. Do they have little Google Maps scooters that go around the mall, or do they have more sophisticated ways of doing this?
They have some more sophisticated way, but many malls are in fact mapped out in Google Maps now.
Right. Well, that seems like a really cool idea. It's not obvious to do this kind of thing, and I could see them getting bought by Google or something like that. Do you think they have a standalone product, though?
Well, I mean, it might work for malls or other large buildings, but this does seem to lend itself directly to operate within other map technologies like Google.
Yeah, so I wonder if we'll see them get bought at some point, or contribute to OpenStreetMap or something to that effect. That's
yeah,
really cool.
They'll probably get bought.
So when is it coming to my Windows phone?
Well, that's always a hard thing to answer.
Yeah, is it coming to
your Windows phone? Probably never.
Never. maybe Windows Phone 8 or something. Maybe they can roll up on some of that.
Maybe. I mean, it is Finland, so if you get a Nokia Windows Phone 8 phone.
Sure, maybe there'll be one of those custom applications that Nokia rolled out for Windows Phone. There you go. Maybe Nokia will buy them. No, I doubt they have the stockpile to start buying things all of a sudden.
Yeah, probably not. We'll see, though.
So speaking of companies that don't have giant stockpiles of cash, what's going on with Sprint?
Well, Sprint came out with a kind of a weird press release this week.
Yeah, bizarre, isn't it?
They're basically they're rolling out an MVNO developer kit. So that's mobile virtual network operator. If you want to run your own cell phone network on top of Sprint's towers,
I do.
They are going to make it as easy as possible for you to create your business on top of theirs. So they've stopped courting individual users and have decided to go after entire cell phone businesses.
Yeah, this is really bizarre. They're trying to they're trying to federate their customer base by getting other companies to basically hand over their customers and giving them a way to start that business in the first place. So it's kind of interesting.
So what do you think? Should we start the end user mobile?
Yeah, I would like the end user mobile, and I would need a tower right here on my desk so that I get good reception in my apartment. And I need a tower at work.
We're just going to use their towers.
Right, right. Well, what I mean is, since we have our own company, we'd have to set up our own, like, a couple towers for them, and then we can bring them a user base of two.
I guess we could do that. No, we could sell to other people, you know, based on what we think is an actual fair and equitable cell phone plan strategy.
Right. So, you know,
unlimited data
for free.
No mobile minutes.
Right. For free.
Right.
Yeah. That business will fail.
If you keep on insisting on making everything free, then yeah, it'll fail.
Yeah, that's true. I wouldn't be a very good businessman.
We
I'll
could
tell you that.
Charge.
Well, so that's interesting. Don't you think Sprint is maybe they're not done for, but they're not going to leap ahead anytime soon.
I don't know. This might work. It'll take somebody like that, you know, somebody to build a new type of mobile network and make it work within Sprint's structural boundaries.
Yeah, it's almost like taking Boost or something and federating it out to a bunch of different companies that don't have the money to invest in infrastructure, but have a few customers that they can offer Sprint. It's kind of an interesting idea.
Right. Well, so most of the mobile virtual networks are already running on Sprint in the United States anyway. Not all of them, but most of them.
And that's no surprise. So let's take a look at the wireline technology. In fact, you're getting an upgrade pretty soon.
That's right. Where I am right now, we are awaiting the Verizon Fios technicians.
Yeah, it's you and Richard Gunther, I think, is also switching to Fios, if I'm not mistaken.
Yep, we're gonna get some 75 megabits per second.
Oh boy, that's
and it'll probably turn out to be higher than that because a new study of broadband internet providers have shown that Verizon Fios and one other cable provider, Cablevision, are offering on average 120% of their advertised download speeds.
See, I, for some reason, I had always assumed that would be the opposite, that they would offer 80%.
Well, there are some companies that are offering right around 80%. Quest only offers 83%, Windstream 84%, and Frontier only offers 79% on average of their advertised speed.
Ouch. Yeah, I know, but the amount of companies that are high up on the list, especially the national ones, are a bit surprising to me. I guess it's because you notice it when it goes wrong, not when it goes right. You know, when I do a speed test, I'm like, hey, I'm paying more money for this bandwidth, and you notice it. And then when you just get another 20% of bandwidth, you don't even notice because you don't feel wronged.
Especially with cable, you know, there's always more people using it when you want to use it, and since it's shared bandwidth, your speed goes down.
Yeah, that's true. So I've always said that the carriers aren't your friends. It turns out that in this one particular aspect of the industry, they are.
Well, I mean, this is just a chart that shows which carriers are your friends and which ones aren't.
Yeah, I guess that's right. The ones toward the bottom of the list are not your friend.
Right. Now, on this same study last year, Cablevision, which was one of those 120% companies, last year their average rate was 54%.
Wow.
Yeah, so they are definitely a most improved company.
Yeah, so they must be pretty happy about that.
They must have done a lot of work. Maybe implemented DOCSIS 3.0 or something.
Yeah, perhaps. It is one of those things that hasn't been rolled out as widely as I thought it would by now.
Which, DOCSIS?
Yeah, DOCSIS 3.0.
I thought it was pretty wide.
Yeah, I don't know. Well, I don't know. I don't have any data to really back that up. But right. Well, speaking of docs, I guess we can move on to our office. Did you have a last word there? You look.
I'm just silently chuckling at your speaking of docs segue.
You're cringing at my pun segue.
It's pretty rough.
Yes, it is pretty rough. All right. So speaking of docs, let's take a look at Microsoft Office 2013. I had a chance to install the consumer preview, and you get a chance to be part of the of Microsoft's Cloud Office 365 service as well. And it's kind of interesting. It is a lot like 2010, but they flattened it to look like Windows 8 style instead of the kind of glassy Windows 7 3D layered thing. They've just flattened it down to be just kind of like all white and simple, and it's a little different. But then all the buttons are kind of in the same spot.
So would you call this like a semi-metro upgrade?
Yeah, I'd say it's about as metro as a desktop app is going to get, right? I mean, if assuming that you have an old app that you are metrifying, then sure, I'd say that. But it's a far cry from having a metro office, which is what I really want.
Well, do you think we're going to get one of those?
I think we will eventually, yeah. I think as it stands, if Microsoft succeeds with this metro stuff, then the Windows desktop will get deprecated eventually. Long way off in the future, though.
So what did you play with, you know, in terms of the actual software?
Mostly Word. I just kind of opened it up and did Word-like things. I wrote an essay about QBasic.
And which version of Word did you have before?
So at home, I have 2007.
Okay.
And I have used 2010 pretty extensively as well. And that's the break. The break is 2003 to 07, right? If you're in 07 and you're looking at 10 or 13, there are minor differences. And the big difference in 2010 was that they had the SkyDrive integration. They've taken that a little bit further than they had previously. And when you go to save a file, it saves it to your SkyDrive. It does not save it to your hard drive. So if that doesn't tell you anything about what Microsoft is trying to do with all of their applications, then you're not paying attention.
Yeah, I guess not. Apple's been trying to do that as well.
Yeah, I guess, what are their, do you have their office suite? What's it called again?
No, I do not.
Numbers and all that?
I don't have those. I like to use Google Docs whenever possible.
Yeah, whenever possible, Google Docs is preferable. That's what we use for our show notes. It's just...
Sometimes I use LibreOffice. I have that installed. And then I found a great text editor, which I use for private stuff called Bean.
Bean? So that has some encryption rolled into it?
Yeah, it's a fantastic open source full-featured text editor for Macs.
Yeah, I like the... So if you're writing an essay or something for school, or you're writing something for work, I mean, you really have to use Word. But for a lot of the stuff that we do on the side, I feel like Google Docs is probably enough, right?
Right.
But yeah, if you're like heavy into citations and stuff like that, forget it. You got to use Office. Or OpenOffice, I suppose. I've always felt like OpenOffice and LibreOffice are... stuck at the Office 03 level.
No, LibreOffice is pretty good, actually. It's gone beyond that. OpenOffice, I think the development has died down.
It's dried up.
Really, yeah, but all of the OpenOffice developers have moved on into LibreOffice. And it's got great format support, and it's fairly simple to use.
Now, here's a little something that may be a little bit annoying. They've added a cursor animation. So as you type, the cursor moves over smoothly. I know that's a really little thing, but it's going to take some getting used to. It's actually kind of a major thing.
Yeah, that sounds really irritating to me, just trying to imagine it.
Yeah, and when you do when you make a new line with the Enter key, it like swoops down and then swoops off back to the left.
Boy.
But it's fast. It's fast, so it's not...
If it ain't broke... it's fast on your computer, but is it fast on every computer?
No. It was fast on my netbook. So, yeah, it should be fast on anyone's computer.
We'll see. If you're multitasking, still fast?
Multitasking is never fast on that netbook. I don't know what you're talking about.
Right, but I'm saying those cursor animations should still be fast.
Yeah, they should still be.
But are they?
Oh, yes. On my netbook, they were. Absolutely. So
even when you were multitasking?
I was using like Word and a file explorer. So
No, that doesn't count.
That does not count. Yeah. I'm going back to a command line text editor, just for the record. I'm going to start using Vim.
Going back to WordPerfect.
Yeah. Yeah, WordPerfect. No, WordStar.
LetterPerfect.
You know, WordStar is where all of the copy and paste keyboard shortcuts came from.
Just save everything in ASCII 2 directly to the C prompt.
Yes. This is preferable. No, but so Office 2013 does look pretty interesting. And especially if you have your SkyDrive and you like SkyDrive and you like to save to SkyDrive, then I think this is really this is really good integration to SkyDrive. And if you don't care about that, then it probably doesn't matter a whole lot. And the other bit is, if you care about having a good user experience on Windows 8, then this is going to be better for you. But those were they did add a lot, but those are the things that stuck out to me. The cursor animation.
Well, it doesn't really sound to me like it's worth the upgrade, but maybe we're missing some things. It's only been out for a few days, and it's only the consumer preview. It's not the final version.
No, it's not. So they've got some work to do, but it is interesting to see them align all of their products with the kind of Windows 8 design metaphor. So I support that going forward for sure.
Okay, cool. Glad you had a chance to check it out and tell us about it.
All right, so let's move on to our tip of the week. Taylor, you have a good one for us from talking to a fellow DMZ member. What's going on there?
That's right. So Phil Lozen from over at the Scene in HD podcast, he had a problem earlier this week where he lost a hard drive. And now this is, you know, bound to happen every once in a while. Hard drives fail. It's just a fact of life. And hopefully you back everything up. But I guess this was sort of his backup / media drive or something. And so he was trying to figure out how to get stuff off of the drive after it crashed. And this is possible sometimes. And Chris, have you ever had to deal with this? Have you ever had to go into Linux or something to recover the contents of a drive?
Yeah, I've done this, but I've never done this successfully.
Right. So coincidentally, Lifehacker shared this week a Linux utility called SafeCopy that once you're in Linux, it will go even farther to recover your files. And it can recover partial files. You know, even if most of the disk is corrupt, it can save whatever's on there. Now I've recovered drives in Linux before. I had to. I didn't have any backup. It worked just by running a live CD of Linux.
Yeah, or I've used Ultimate Boot CD to do some of that kind of stuff.
Right. Linux, you know, even a live CD of Linux is a great way to explore failed hard drives, see if you can get some stuff back off of them. And if that's still not working, then SafeCopy is a good way to go. And, you know, if you're already running Linux, might as well try SafeCopy. You'll probably get more out of it, or it'll download it faster or more completely. But turns out Phil Lozen didn't need SafeCopy, but he did use Linux.
Oh, well, that's good. Well, at least he figured that out.
So that's our tip of the week in case your hard drive ever fails, which it will. It's a fact of life. Hard drives fail.
Yep. Take backups, people.
Right. Now, I've been reading about the failure rates of solid-state drives, which I've got in my machine right now. And they're lower, but when they do fail, it can be much more catastrophic.
That's interesting. So the stakes are higher. So I guess you should definitely, it's more important to have a backup because they're less recoverable. I don't know.
No worries there, though. Now everything's backed up on Time Machine.
It's important to have a backup no matter what your hard drive is, because it will fail. If you live long enough using computers, your hard drives will fail at some point.
True.
And if you podcast long enough, the hard drive will fail in the middle of the podcast. So I'm waiting for that one to happen.
Well, it sort of happened to us one time.
Yeah, no. The computer conked out, but it wasn't the hard drive.
Right, it wasn't the hard drive. Okay. All right, well, that's it for the tip of the week this week.
Cool. Well, that's a good one. So you are also responsible for our kicker this week. What do we got going on here? There, I see cats and bat signals and the Batman movies this weekend and SOPA. I, what do I make of this?
So it's a sort of a publicity stunt, viral marketing thing by the Internet Defense League that is trying to garner support for a fairer internet. And they will be shooting a cat signal from a spotlight into the sky in cities all over the world, by which I mean Washington, D.C., New York, San Francisco, and Ulaanbaatar, Mongolia.
Mongolia? That seems random. There must have been like a user group or something.
Or maybe just a big signal with a cat decal.
So are we going to be able to see this tonight?
If you've got it, use it.
Are we going to see this tonight if you're in one of those cities?
You know, just go and look up into the sky at night.
All right, I'll see if... what am I supposed to do with my cats when I see the cat signal?
Maybe just take pictures and post them to the internet.
Yeah, that's the usual response. Take Instagram pictures of them.
Caption. Maybe create some kind of caption that that supports a free and open internet.
Yeah, so they're trying to promote the free and open internet. I can get behind that. Can we make our own cat signals? That's what I really want to do.
Sure. You just need to find a big spotlight.
Big spotlight. That might be kind of hard to come by. I don't know.
Well, you can just Photoshop it and say you did.
Yeah, that's right. All right. Well, I'll just have to boot up Photoshop and I'll tweet that photo out later.
Well, don't tell them you're going to do it.
Oh, I'm supposed to pretend like it's authentic? Sorry.
Yes, of course you are. That's the whole point of Photoshop.
All right. Well, let's put a cap on it for this week. We've got a little bit of just something to let the listeners know that next week I am going to be away from the podcast for the first time in 102 episodes. And Taylor will be taking my place as the host, but not the producer, of The End User next week. And we will be joined by a special guest. You'll see who joins us. Which means we haven't quite figured it out yet, have we?
Somehow you will still be producing it.
That's right.
Even though you won't be there.
No, so I'm going on vacation and I'm able to remote into my home network and produce it, but I won't have the bandwidth to stream myself.
Okay, well, that'll be interesting.
Yeah, so look forward to Taylor hosting next week. I'll be listening in. I'll be in the chat room probably, so I guess I'll join you guys in the chat room.
All right, good. Glad to have my back.
All right, so let's get out of here. Taylor, if somebody were to try to contact you on the public internet, how would they do so?
You can just yell really loud into your computer, actually.
We put up a cat signal.
Yeah, well, that's one way. A cat signal is a great way.
Yes.
But just make sure the cat has a T on its forehead, otherwise I won't know it's for me.
Okay.
Right. Or you can just you can put at Taylor phone in the cat signal, or you can just go ahead and tweet me that way. I'm at Taylor phone on Twitter.
An excellent answer. And I am at Chris Hale Barnes. So,
and if you're yelling into your computer and I'm not answering, it's because you're not yelling loud enough. Keep trying. I will answer.
You're going to get some neighbors upset at some point here. So thank you everyone for listening to the show, and of course you can find more information, including the show notes, over at thedigitalmediazone.com under The End User. That's THENDUSR. The DMZ has a few other podcasts that you could have a listen to, like Entertainment 2.0, Scene in HD, and The Movie Podcast. So go have a listen. They're all three of them are really good. You can send us some feedback at TheEndUser@thedigitalmediazone.com, or you can follow us on Twitter. We are at The End User. Join us live in the chat room as we broadcast live every Thursday night at 8:30 p.m. Eastern Time. I am your host and producer, Chris Barnes.
And I'm Taylor Moore.
Thanks for listening, folks. We will see you next week. Bye-bye.